AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth. Live from the KATH 910 AM studios in Las Colinas and broadcasting across North Texas on the Guadalupe Radio Network, this is the Good News Show.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Good News Show here on KATH 910 AM and also KCPP 1140 AM. We're also broadcasting on the GRN app and on our live stream at grnonline.com. And we've got a really interesting program for you today. There's a topic we're going to talk about here in a few minutes that has really, really been on the mind and hearts and prayers of a lot of people. And this is the controversy with the big casino that the Sands Corporation was trying to bring to Irving, Texas. For the time being, that effort has been pushed back thanks to a lot of concerned citizens, including a lot of Catholics. And I don't remember a topic that got as many phone calls and emails for me personally than this one. And I am very excited to talk to our institution guests, who I'll tell you about in just a minute. And in the second half of the program, my friend Ingrid Meyer is going to be here. She is the founder of Semper Maria. She has a great devotion to Our Lady Guadalupe and has the relic image of Our Lady Guadalupe that she travels with. And she is going to be at All Saints Catholic Parish in North Dallas next month. And she just led a pilgrimage down to Mexico City to the shrine. And so she's going to kind of give us an update about her going on, and she's going to be in studio with me during the second half. But during the first half, I do want to talk about this Irving controversy. I want to thank Sarah Berry, Dr. Sarah Berry from University of Dallas. She's a professor. Also, Dr. Chris Beloy, who was the first one to contact me about this, and Emily Glicksman. All three of them are very much tied into University of Dallas for helping me get just a really great lineup of guests, including our friend James Bell, who you remember, you've heard his voice because he has been a sponsor on the station. He is a certified financial planner with the Knights of Columbus. He and his wife are parents of six children. They're parishioners at Modern Day Catholic Church in Irving, and he comes at it from a parent and also a business standpoint. Also, Dr. John Soriano is a assistant professor of economics at the University of Dallas, and he recently wrote an op-ed called that was carried by the Dallas Morning News that was titled "Why Irving Must Say No to the Casino Plan. Evidence shows that the cost to our community will be too high." And he wrote that along with Chad Englund. And we're also going to have on the phone with us Deacon Andrew Gill, who is from St. Basil the Great Parish in Irving, Texas. He's a deacon. He's also has a PhD in psychology, I believe. He is a Catholic counselor and also a member of the clergy. And he's going to talk about addiction, risk behaviors, illegal activity, and what some of the negative downside of this planned casino. I understand it would have been the largest casino, I think, in the world, right here in Irving, just a couple miles from where we're broadcasting right now. But before that, I want to bring in Cecil Anderson, and she is our producer, and she's our North Texas assistant. Cecil, how are you? Good to see you.
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you?
Did this whole casino thing hit your radar? Do you have a lot of people talking to you about it?
I only really hit my radar probably about a month ago when a couple of our really, you know, dedicated volunteers started talking to me about it, because we work in Irving, but I guess it just wasn't really on my radar when you don't live in the city.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we are talking about this, because I've been very interested since then.
Yeah, the UD community especially was really, really, and thanks be to God. I mean, it showed what can happen, because a lot of people were very cynical and said, it doesn't matter. They're going to get this either way. I had people tell me that, and at least for the time being, that's not the case. All right, real quickly, before we move on to our topic, it's Holy Week. I love this week. You know, kind of ramps up. There's not a whole lot going on the next couple of days. I think the Chrism Masses tend to be maybe Tuesday, which I always think it's so great to go to a Chrism Mass with the bishop and all the priests, and they bless all the oils for the whole year. Do you do the Triduum, Cicero? Are you going to be going to everything? I kind of figured that'd be the case.
That is the goal. I always love being able to go to Holy Thursday Mass and Adoration, usually afterwards that our parish has, go to a service on Good Friday, and then I traditionally go to the Easter Vigil. And after the Easter Vigil, our young adult group usually gets together and has a big celebratory breakfast very, very late at night or early in the morning, depending on when Mass ends. So,
Yeah. So happy Holy Week to everybody. Hope you have a great rest of your Lent. And then Triduum beginning Thursday. And, of course, the grand celebration of Easter Sunday, the resurrection of our Lord on Sunday. So I hope it's just a blessed week for all of you who are listening. All right, let's move on to our topic here of the plans that have been rebuffed, at least for the time being, of bringing the world's largest casino to Irving, Texas, right where the old Texas Stadium was nearby, very close to all these great Catholic institutions in Irving, like the University of Dallas and the Cistercian Monastery and School in the Highlands and the seminary. I mean, this is Catholic Central. There's so much going on, and thanks be to God, a lot of very concerned citizens were able to at least put a hold on this, and we're going to talk about this with our guests here in a moment. Let me read a little bit, and then I'm going to bring our guests in. The article that I read said, after another meeting that stretched into the early morning hours, the Irving City Council approved rezoning land for a destination resort, but not a casino. This all came down the week of March 17th, okay, which is interesting because we celebrate a couple of really important saints that week, Patrick and Joseph, and I'm sure their intercession played a part in this. During the Thursday night meeting back on March 20th, the Las Vegas Sands Corporation requested that the casino portion of the proposal be removed from the plans. Hundreds of people signed up to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting, of which a vast majority were opposed to the project. The meeting wrapped up Friday morning about 2:00 in the morning. Okay, so the timeline is Tuesday, March 18th, the Irving Planning and Zoning Commission voted on rezoning. They approved it. The city council was scheduled to vote on the rezoning Thursday, March 20th. On the morning of March 20th, this is when Las Vegas Sands Corporation withdrew the rezoning proposal, effectively killing the plans for a casino resort at the former Texas Stadium site, at least for now. So that's what I'm going to read to you, and I want to bring in our guests now so that we can get some expert commentary on this. And first of all, Dr. John Soriano, again, assistant professor of economics at the University of Dallas. He and his wife are parents of 1 2.5-year-old daughter. They worship at St. Anne Parish. He is in his second year as a professor of economics at the University of Dallas. And welcome. Thanks for taking some time to be here. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Good to see you, too.
Yeah. So you wrote an article, Why Irving Must Say No to the Casino Plan. Evidence shows that the cost to our community will be too high. Clearly, you don't think this is, even from an economic standpoint, to leave all the other things aside, because we'll talk to Jimmy and Dr. Gill about that. But as an economics guy, you think this would be bad? Because I think most people would say, gosh, jobs and income and, you know, so much would come into it. Even if you don't like it from a moral standpoint, it would be good economically, but you disagree.
Yeah, so economists have this concept that we lean on a lot, and it's called opportunity cost. And that says that the true cost of something is what you could be doing with it otherwise. So, for example, you could potentially make money using AT&T Stadium for, like, some nice barbershop quartet. But ultimately, that would be at the cost of using it for the Dallas Cowboys, which would make a lot more money. So that would make it pretty costly to do. So now this kind of applies here as well. So what Sands Corporation does is they basically say, okay, so here's the number of people we'd be planning on hiring at this casino. And then here's the amount of revenue that would run through it. And then this is the economic benefit of the casino. Now, that's the wrong way of thinking about it, because that compares it to just allowing it to be an empty plot of land in perpetuity. When the reality is, it's a very attractive piece of land. It's almost 200 acres. For perspective, that's like larger than the size of Disneyland. And it's very centrally located in one of the most vibrant metroplexes in the world, Dallas-Fort Worth. Great view of the Dallas skyline, great airport access, great highway access. So it's clearly a very potentially productive plot of land. So there's a lot of other things that could be there instead. And that's really what the proper comparison should be, what we could be doing with it otherwise.
Yeah, and now the Sands Corporation, and they wanted this area for all the reasons that you just explained. And but they are still planning on building something there, right? But they have been saying that it's not as appealing to them if they don't have the gaming. But what is the plan right now? What is going to happen at this lot? Are they still going to build something? And what can we foresee in the coming months or years?
Well, I think at this point they're being intentionally a little opaque about it because, I still think that they are, as they've been explicit, though, in this respect, that they are a casino company, and that's how they make money. That's what they know how to do. So, my read of the situation is that they're kind of lying in the background now, and they want to push to get gambling legalized in Texas more broadly. Then I think if they get a more favorable city council here in Irving, that they'll then turn around and try and get this rezoned again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is also renewed interest in city council because even a guy I know, Adam Moeller, who's running for city council, I don't know exactly what his motivations are, but I think it shows the, and this is more of a political question than an economics one, but the importance of civic engagement and that people, if you do rise up and enough people show up at these meetings, you actually can make a difference. Were you, Dr. Soriano, were you actually at any of these meetings, or did you witness any of the public outcry?
Oh yeah, so the week of the big zoning vote, there was a planning and zoning commission meeting that happened. I think it was on the Tuesday, maybe the Monday. So I went to that, and then the actual vote by the city council was on Thursday, and then there was a work session earlier that day. So and then also the actual meeting where the vote took place. I spoke at all three of those events. So at the planning and zoning, the city council work session, and the one at night as well.
And let's just say hypothetically the vote had gone the other way, and let's say a couple years from now we do have the world's largest casino in North Texas right here in Irving. From an economic standpoint, what do you think that this community could expect, or what would be the downside, or how would it change this area?
Okay, so here's how building on my answer from before, that you got to think about what could happen otherwise, that's also the appropriate way to study this. So the best studies on casinos, what they do is they take counties that got casinos over time, and the particular studies I'm thinking of look at basically the time when casino gambling started expanding from Nevada to about 29 other states over a period of about 20 years. And they looked at counties that got casinos, and then they compared them to similar counties that did not get casinos, and then looked at the outcomes of what happened in these places. And there's a few key takeaways from that. First, in terms of the benefit side, in terms of economics, like I was saying earlier, these are like areas that have high population and high economic productivity. They have a lot of opportunities anyway. So it's really kind of like these casinos jumping on the boat in water that's already rising. So in a dense place like Dallas-Fort Worth, these studies found that the economic impact on things like earnings and employment were basically zero compared to those other counties that did not get casinos.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, in terms of actual costs to the community, that's actually rather stark. And that's particularly quantified by crime. So in comparison to counties that did not receive casinos, the counties that got casinos had large increases in property crime and violent crime. And this includes things like assault, rape, robbery, larceny, burglary, auto theft. They found increases in all of these things. To put some numbers on that, they found that there was an 8.6% increase in property crime and a 12.5% increase in violent crime.
Mm.
And this is from the study by economists Earl Grinnells and David Mustard, and this is published in the Review of Economics and Statistics, and that's generally thought of as one of the most selective and rigorous economics journals out there.
One other thing I want to ask you, and then we'll go over to Dr. Gill. Again, you can talk more on the issues like addiction and crime and things like that, which you've already kind of touched on. Property values. Did any kind of study about what would happen to property values? You've got some beautiful homes in University Hills right around the University of Dallas. Do you think people would expect the value of their homes to go down if the casino came, or would it be the opposite?
Well, I mean, just think about this intuitively. If you knew that there was going to be a large increase in crime in an area, would you be more or less likely to want to buy a home there?
Yeah.
My prediction on that would be that the values of homes would go down.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Thank you so much. We'll come back, and if you want to jump in at the end, I'd love to get some further information from you. Dr. John Soriano, second-year professor of economics at the University of Dallas, and Deacon Andrew Gill is on the phone with me. He is a deacon at St. Basil the Great Byzantine Church in Irving, and he's also a Catholic counselor and is going to talk more about gambling addiction, the effects of the community. Dr. Gill, Deacon Gill, thank you very much for being on the program with me today.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. When did this story first hit your radar, and what was your initial reaction to the idea of the world's largest casino coming basically right in our backyard here?
Well, I think that initially I was more curious. What was this all about? I guess I'd connected a little bit to, there was the Mavs owner came into town, and Luka also got traded to the Lakers. So I think that there was like a few moves that were occurring where, you know, there's some moving of money and shifting of money. So I was kind of a little suspicious and just curious about what's happening right now.
Yeah, you know, Jimmy Bell is here as well, and he had mentioned that as well. We'll get that whole Luka, which I never made that connection, but we'll talk about that in just a second. So, you know, in your expertise as a deacon and also a Catholic counselor, what impact do you think having the world's largest casino in this area would have from a crime standpoint? What would it look like? How would Irving, Texas change if we did have the world's largest casino right here?
So I think there's a few things. So we're going to cover like that. Is there a crime connection here? And, you know, how's it also impacting mental health if a casino comes in? I did actually grow up in Vegas, so I had some experience with like being in a culture where casinos were. And also, I've worked with people that have had gambling addictions. They may be gambling in Oklahoma, for example. So there are different things, I think, that come up with the crime. The initial casinos coming into town really don't hit crime as hard. But then about 3 years in, you start seeing some crime kind of occur. And one of the interesting facts that I was like researching about this is that actually, the criminals are actually the ones that are more pathological gamblers. So you see about when the percentage on that is like 50% of pathological gamblers will commit crimes. Hmm. And their crimes vary from like fraud to counterfeiting to theft to, you know, different robberies and things like that. So it kind of varies. But I think that the more severe the gambling addiction is, the more the crime occurs. So that's something that was really interesting. And just to speak to that, what is the percentage of the pathological gambling? Well, National Council on Problem Gambling approximates 1% of American adults. Okay, but this can go up to like 3%. So you got like a 1 to 3%, 3.4 is, you know, the higher one that I saw. And interesting enough, there is a correlation between that pathological gambling and the subtypes of being impulsive or having like an OCD symptom or an addictive symptom. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. You know, not only addiction, but I'm guessing, and there's probably some statistic out there about the increase in prostitution, sex trafficking, human trafficking of all sorts. Anything about that? Because it just seems like it brings in a bad element, and that bad element is going to bring a lot of even when there's like a Super Bowl here that happens. I mean, of course, there's a lot of gambling associated with professional sports. But any comment on that, Deacon Gill?
Yeah, so I think that it's important to note that it varies where the casino is located, and higher visitor populations, there's more potential victims and offenders, okay? And there's also where there's more increased cash circulation, also where, like I said, the pathological gambling is leading to financial crimes, and also development of related industries, okay? So like bars, clubs, increases, that correlates with certain crimes. But you know, this varies, like in the research, it varies from place to place to place. But we are in a very high concentrated place, right? So we've got a big population. So we've got money in this region that could actually lend itself to higher crime.
Yes, thanks so much. We're talking about the Sands Corporation's plan to bring the world's largest casino to Irving, Texas, and the reaction in especially the local Catholic and the Muslim population, which Jimmy Bell can tell us about as well, really came out. Almost everybody, from what I understand, who spoke at these public meetings was in opposition to this. And in the end, at least for right now, the Sands Corporation has withdrawn its plans to build a casino right here in our backyard in Irving, Texas. All right, so my third guest is James Bell, Jimmy Bell. He's an Irving resident. As I mentioned, he and his wife are parents to six children, mostly young children. He also is a certified financial planner with the Knights of Columbus, and you've heard his voice because he's been a sponsor on this station. So, Jimmy, Tom, you come with a lot of standpoints. In fact, you were the one that I talked to the day on that Thursday, March 20th, and you were going to the public hearing, and you were going to speak, and you were really up in arms about this. Why is this so personal to you?
So, in my opinion, first of all, I should make a quick side statement. I can't speak for the Knights of Columbus, my employer. They've got their own spokesman and things like that, and I'm speaking as an individual citizen of Irving. But what we had big concerns from the perspective of what was going to be the effect of this for the long term, in terms of the crime and the other things that were already discussed. In particular, one of the things that I thought was there's a large people who have opposition in general to gambling, but they have a special opposition to sort of a predatory gambling approach that kind of is targeting kind of the middle class and lower middle class. In some of their marketing materials, including the one where the Sands Corporation provided to the city council, they described kind of a very, very upscale thing that would be somewhat confined to wealthier gamblers, similar to their proposal in Singapore. But in that location, the reason that they ended up restricting the gambling to high-end gamblers was because the city government and the government of Singapore drove a very hard bargain with them and told them, hey, you're not going to allow locals to be here. You're not going to allow, you know, lower income people to be preyed upon. And so there was a little bit of a bait and switch there. The other thing that kind of factors into this whole dynamic is the Luca trade, which we referenced earlier. So there's three. This is very deeply related to the Luca trade. There's three things that are important to realize about the Luca trade and how it sort of ties into this whole issue. The Luka trade is bewildering from a basketball perspective. I'm a big NBA fan and a Mavericks fan, and I just couldn't believe my eyeballs when I saw that Luka had been traded away, supposedly because he's injury prone, for a player who's not nearly as good, is 8 years older, and far more injury prone and less talented. From a basketball perspective, it made absolutely no sense. And the whole commentariat was baffled by it. And so after doing a little bit of research, and Dr. Soriano had referenced some of these facts, and Dr. Gill as well, the target market for a high-performing NBA team is different than the target market for a casino company. So a really high-quality NBA team that's winning, like the Warriors a few years ago and so forth, their ticket prices are quite high, and season tickets can be enormously expensive. As a result, they are sort of appealing to a higher level clientele in terms of income and wealth. If, on the other hand, not to pick on them, but the Washington Wizards, which is a very, very poorly run team and has been terrible for literally decades, my brother unfortunately roots for them. Their tickets are dirt cheap, relatively speaking, and so their fan base is much more low income. Well, the casino, it actually extracts the vast majority of its income and wealth from lower to middle class people. So having the team do worse It's good from a casino perspective in the sense that the overlap between the casino target audience and the actual NBA is stronger, and the NBA team in this case, the Mavericks. So that has the benefit of decreasing payroll and pushing the Mavericks down the totem pole towards a more ideal client base for the casino specifically.
Interestingly, and you can comment on this, is that now they've traded Luka away. The team is going to go down the hill, but they're not going to get their casino. Does that mean the whole thing kind of imploded, or are they looking long range?
I think they're definitely looking down range. In the casino industry, there's a concept called a loss leader. And so the way that works is if you walk into a casino, almost the first thing you get given, and one of the reasons that many of our Muslim friends oppose the casino, among many other reasons, is that you get handed a free vodka. Now, the vodka, if you look at their profit and loss statement, is listed as what's called a loss leader. It's something that you're deliberately trying to lose money on in order to bring in revenue in a different way. The Mavericks essentially are going to become a loss leader for this kind of combo facility. And so it decreases the value of the team. And also in the case of the casino arena complex, it sort of brought the whole community together. There was a lot of opposition from University of Dallas, which filed a legal objection, and the Muslim community came out in force, and the Sands Corporation in various ways has attempted to retaliate against both communities. In the one case, the University of Dallas's case, through a bill in the Austin legislature, which I would encourage everyone to call their people to oppose. That bill is the bill number is not something I know by heart. I'll have that sent out later. There's a bill basically that's designed to raise from 20% to 60% the level of legal objection to an organization to have an area that they own land in this case, PUD 6, rezoned. And it's sponsored by Brian Hughes in the Texas State Senate and Angela Orr in the Texas House. We need to oppose that bill. In the Muslims case, there was a dramatic escalation, which has resulted in some legal issues that has occurred after they showed out in numbers on the March 20th issue. And so there's retaliation to both sides of the coalition.
Let me bring Dr. Gill back into the conversation, because Dr. Gill, being our clergy member on the panel here, the Catholic Church does not oppose gambling in and of itself. Maybe you can speak on that. It opposes, of course, the things that you're talking about, like the crime and the addictions and things like that. But a Catholic doesn't have to oppose a casino, right? Do you want to speak on that? But obviously, pretty much almost across the board, the people who were Catholic and at these meetings was opposed to it. But do you want to speak on the church's teaching on gambling itself?
Yeah, I think, you know, Dave, the thing that comes up, I think, that is like moral in nature here is that it is like increased accessibility of gambling is going to lead to more gambling opportunities. And then that's going to increase the risk for the vulnerable individual. So that I think that's where the church is going to really be focused is, you know, it's not going to get into the weeds on the back and forth on the specific gambling act as much as it is. This can be exploitive of the dignity of the human person. And I think the church is going to really focus on that vulnerable population, including those that have mental health issues. You know, like it is known, you know, I had a client before I came on the radio show, and he was talking to me because I told him I was coming on the radio. And he said, you know, I knew a person who's involved in this industry. And he said that, you know, they want, similar to what the gentleman said right before me, they want lower social economic people so, you know, that they can, you know, there's they can engage with that addictive process more. Yeah. So that's the concern. And, you know, we see that pathological gamblers have more elevated rates of mood disorders from like 37.9%, anxiety disorders 37.4%. And substance abuse, right, 57.5% compared to general population. So we're seeing that this is, I think the church is going to, you know, advocate for the vulnerable, you know, those that are vulnerable. And I think in this case, yeah, this is definitely something that's going to exploit, you know, lower economic people, and it exploits our brain. You know, like, yeah. it impacts, there are three areas that are really impacted in our brain is, you know, just briefly, anterior cingulate, the insula, and the orbital frontal cortex are very vulnerable areas for this. And I want to tell you this, Dave, what happens is that you basically, the anticipation of winning is so strong that it feels like winning.
Yeah.
And for a person who has a pathological gambler, or even those that are vulnerable to, like, you know, overextend their money, like even our college students at University of Dallas, for example, I heard that there's concern about that, is that, you know, near misses are so exciting for people. If you get a near miss, like a 7-7 in a blank, it's so close that your brain is like, I want to get that other seven. You know, I want to get all those sevens in a row. And that just feeds the brain in a way that you bet more and you lose more.
Yeah. Yeah, and very interesting. Dr. Gill, thanks so much. I wish we had more time on this topic, and maybe we can revisit it sometime, but I really appreciate your input as well. Dr. Soriano, again, Assistant Professor of Economics at the University of Dallas. I know you don't speak for the University of Dallas as a whole, and we could get somebody from UD in at some point as well. But I'm imagining as parents might, you know, in choosing Catholic universities might say, gosh, I don't know if I want a kid to be that close to a casino. So the University of Dallas, I guess from top to bottom, was opposed to this, would you say? Or was there an official stand? Or are you aware of what that was from the UD?
Especially with respect to the gambling component of this, the university has explicitly signaled opposition to that part of it as well.
And I think Dr. Sanford was actually at these meetings, wasn't he? The president of UD? Did he come out?
That is correct. The other thing about University of Dallas's opposition is that they own 20% of the land inside of the affected area, and that gives them a legal right to lodge a legal objection, which they have done, to the casino gambling. And that in turn creates a need, if a judge rules that they have the standing to do so, to require that they can only pass by a supermajority. Mm-hmm. So this move by the University of Dallas is a big deal. And it's the reason that the Las Vegas Sands is pushing people in Austin to strip the University of Dallas of its legal right in order of doing that. The bill that I referenced earlier, I've now pulled up. It's HB 24 in the Texas State House. And SB 844, sponsored by Representative Angela Orr and Senator Brian Hughes, respectively. I would urge anyone listening to call your local legislator and ask them to oppose these two bills. This is targeting UD, and it could derive very great harm to the University of Dallas, which is a treasured institution of this community.
Just a thanks so much. Jimmy Bell there, Irving resident, local financial planner, and of course, also father of six children. He and his wife have six children. Dr. Soriano, we just want to give you a chance from an economic standpoint, from a father standpoint. Anything else you want to throw in at the end? Do we just have a couple minutes remaining in light of your expertise?
Yeah, sure. I mean, one thing I tell my students all the time is that we rightfully think about numbers and we think about getting all the measurements right. This one hit home for me because I ultimately saw it as an economist, but a person as well. I work just a few minutes away from this casino site. I live about a 5-minute drive away from that casino site with, as you mentioned earlier, my 2.5-year-old daughter. And she's starting at a preschool next year. That's also a stone's throw away from that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you have these studies that show that there's going to be a large increase in crime in those places and then the surrounding places as well, I mean, that hurts you on a real human level.
Yeah, it certainly does. Thank you very much for being with us. Also, Dr. Gill. Jimmy, last question. Just have about 45 seconds remaining. What do you expect next? This isn't over. We're not like, you know, doing high fives and on to the next thing. This is not over yet. But what should people know as far as the future of this issue?
I think that the most important thing people can do is inform themselves and prepare for the upcoming election. The city council composition is going to change on May 3rd. Everyone in the race noticed that the citizens of Irving were almost unanimously opposed to this, and they've shifted to the right. So what you want to do is search out the candidates that have expressed a position before the shift in public opinion and the retreat by the Las Vegas Sands in this battle, and support those candidates specifically.
All right. Thank you very much to all of you, James Bell, Deacon Andrew Gill, and also Dr. John Soriano from the University of Dallas. Really appreciate your time. I wish we had more time, but I think we at least scratched the surface, and our listeners now have a better idea of what's going on. And again, thank you very much, Dr. Sarah Berry, Dr. Chris Malloy, and also Emily Glicksman, who were very helpful in arranging the folks that came in to speak about this topic. We are going to take a break, and then when we come back, talk about Semper Maria, Our Lady of Guadalupe, of course, one of our great, of course, the patroness of this radio network, the patroness of the Americas, and our guest Ingrid Meyer is going to talk about her devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe, and also some events coming up where you can venerate a relic, a true image relic of the tilma of Our Lady Guadalupe. So that's coming up right around the corner. We'll be back.
Today's culture has mystified masculinity, where emotions are a sign of weakness. All men, 18 and older, are invited to reclaim their identity as true men following Christ. The Men in Front Men's Summit will take place on Friday, June 27th through Saturday, June 28th at St. Martin de Porres Catholic Church in Prosper. The summit includes fellowship, beer, and brisket on Friday evening. Begins Saturday with Mass and dynamic talks by Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. Register now at stmartindepoorsmenssummit.org.
Do you need a new branding strategy that allows you to educate and engage with your local community while building trust and credibility? Decided Excellence Catholic Media offers a very unique branding platform which showcases you as the expert in your industry. Our exclusive publications are open, read, kept, and shared with thousands of readers in communities throughout Texas and nationwide. To learn more about our powerful branding solutions, please contact Doreen Cheney at dchaney@decidedexcellence.com. That's dchaney@decidedexcellence.com.
St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School in Dallas invites you to a special concert by Tony Melendez on Wednesday, April 31st from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Terry Center at Jesuit High School. Tony was born without arms and touched the entire world in 1987 when he was embraced by Pope John Paul II after singing and playing guitar for the Holy Father in Los Angeles. Today, Tony continues to play and sing beautiful music. Tickets are $30 and available by visiting the school website at smcsaintsandscholars.org.
Guadalupe Radio Network welcomes new sponsor, Saint Candles. Founded by music executive to comfort a friend diagnosed with a life-threatening illness, the Saint Candle Collection has grown to more than 25 candles. Each modern candle is handmade with a prayer coin inside and dedicated to a patron saint. Saint Raphael for healing, Saint Philomena for children, Saint Anthony of Padua for finding love, and many more as well. To see what Saint Candles are available, visit saintcandles.com.
The Guadalupe Radio Network has kept the promise for 25 years. In the year 2000, we promised to use our network to promote holy vocations to the priesthood and religious life. Since then, we've consistently encouraged men and women to be open to God's call to holy vocations in service to the church. The Guadalupe Radio Network's Keeping the Promise 25th Anniversary Celebration will be Saturday, July 19th at the Plano Event Center in North Texas.
Hi, my name is Gabriel Garrison. I'm currently studying at the University of Dallas, and I'm a former student of Homeschool Connections, a Catholic online provider of live and recorded classes for grade school, middle school, and high school students. At Homeschool Connections, your student can learn from teachers with high levels of experience in their fields. You can learn more by visiting homeschoolconnections.com, a sponsor of the GRN. That's homeschoolconnections.com.
Welcome back to the Good News Show. I hope you appreciated that. It was a really good interview coming from a couple of different perspectives about this whole casino controversy and issue. And so I feel like we know a little bit more about what's going on. I'm going to turn our attention now to Our Lady of Guadalupe. My friend Ingrid Meyer is a great devotee of Our Lady of Guadalupe. She is the founder of Semper Maria, which means always Mary. And she also is the custodian of a relic image of the tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And she emailed me recently, Ingrid did, and told me that there's going to be an event coming up It's still a little ways away. It's going to be on Saturday, May 10th at All Saints Catholic Parish in North Dallas on Middle Creek Drive, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., including a Mass at 9 a.m., and then a presentation, Our Lady Guadalupe, Meaning and Symbolism in the Fellowship Hall. There's an 11:30 a.m. rosary. And this image that Ingrid is the custodian for was touched to the original tilma of St. Juan Diego and blessed by St. Pope John Paul II. The graces given on December 12, 1531 were extended to this image. The relic image resides at the Highland School in Irving, Texas. And so we're also going to talk about this event and also the Marian Servants of the Spirit of Christ, and a religious order I've never heard of. So we're going to got a lot to talk about. But Ingrid, thanks for coming in. Good to see you.
Well, thank you so much for having me here. It's always a pleasure to be with you, Dave.
Yeah. I know I've asked you this before, but let's go ahead and rehash this. How did this all begin for you? I know you're connected with the Highland School, and what is the connection between you becoming the custodian of one of a very limited number of these relic images?
Yes.
And how did that all happen?
There's only seven in the United States.
Yeah.
So yes, I was very blessed, and it's a great honor. I started out giving presentations, and I would ask the Highland School, because my children went to school there, if I could borrow the image during my presentations.
So they had it before.
They had it. I think, if I'm not mistaken, between 2018, 2017, okay. I think is when they got it. And I was already giving those presentations, so they allowed me to have her. And then one of their responsibilities when they received the relic was that she would travel.
Mm.
So then I was fulfilling that, and they just asked me if I could just be the custodian, and it's an honor for me.
You're a right place, right person, right time, huh? Because you had the ability to do that. I mean, not everybody would be able to have the time to do this, but this isn't like a hobby. This is your, really, in many ways, your vocation, isn't it?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, you know what? You say yes. That's all we need to do. We give our yes, and then she leads us to where she wants us. I started with the presentations, and Semper Maria continues to grow. We are going to start having healing retreats, one in English in the fall and one in Spanish on June 28th. Then we started the pilgrimages, right, to take them to Mexico City. We do the rosaries at different churches. We take the relic to people who are sick and to parishes, and we give the presentations. But she is the one who leads us where.
Mm.
You know, Dave, I was thinking as I was coming, I was meditating on those words, the first words that Our Lady told Juan Diego, and that was, where are you headed?
Mm.
And I invite all of you to meditate upon these words. Where are you headed? And it's not the physical place, right? It's not geography. It's, where is your soul going?
Yeah.
Where are you going? So this is the perfect way to get to Jesus through our beautiful Blessed Mother.
Mm-hmm.
She always leads us. And that is why when the Marian Servants of the Spirit of Jesus Christ invited us to, as Semper Maria, to take Our Lady to that and give a presentation on May 10th. Imagine what a beautiful gift it can be to our Blessed Mother and to your earthly mother, right? Because it's May 10th, one day before Mother's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
So I invite you, if you can, please come. I think it's going to be a great invitation to and a great time to spend with your mother and to offer up to our Blessed Mother, to learn more about her. Because when you learn more about Mary, you get closer to Jesus.
Yeah, amen. It's not only right before Mother's Day, it's also a few days before another feast day, Our Lady of Fatima, on May 13th as well.
And her month.
The month of May for Our Lady. And, you know, I imagine somebody looking at the Catholic Church from the outside and saying, okay, I'm confused. We got Our Lady of Lourdes, Our Lady of Medjugorje, we got Our Lady of Fatima, Our Lady of Guadalupe. It's all the same person, but these different titles. How would you explain that? Why does Our Lady need so many titles, and how do they all kind of interconnect with each other?
I think it's just, first, mainly, sometimes we just don't get it. You know, she has to come, and she comes in all these different ways for us to understand. And every time she comes with a different mission. You know, there's, so when she came with Lourdes, it was the dogma, right, of the Immaculate Conception.
Yeah.
Right? And Fatima. But when she came to Mexico City, she did not only come for the Indians and for the Spaniards at the time. She came for us at this time. That is why that relic that John Paul II, he wanted there to be one, at least one relic per country, because he knew how important the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe is for our time. She is the woman of Revelations 12:1.
Yeah.
So look at everything that's happening around us, and she comes to remind us. So Our Lady of Guadalupe is the great evangelizer.
Yeah. You know, we all learned that Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492, and the timing just a few decades later in the Americas, Our Lady Guadalupe, of course, there was a lot going on with the Aztecs and all that down in modern-day Mexico, but the timing was not just a coincidence. This was a significant time in history when Our Lady appeared. Do you want to speak on that?
Yes, it was a time where... they have every, like, 52 years, they have where a new sun emerges. And that was in the year 1531 was when their new god was supposed to emerge. And they couldn't do it because the Spaniards had taken away all any devotion and any worshiping to their gods, right? Mm. So that was one of a big sign that they knew something was coming. There were so many things happening at that time, Dave. It was so bad that the bishop had sent a letter to the Holy See into Spain saying, if this doesn't change, we are going back to Spain in less than a year. And then she appeared, and the great miracle, and over 9 million people converted. When in Europe, how many people were losing and were leaving the Catholic faith?
Yeah, because of the Reformation, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then in Mexico, in the Americas, she lifts up the number again with her evangelization of all these Indians.
Yeah, Ingrid Meyer is my guest, and she is the custodian of the original relic image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. I want to ask you to elaborate a bit on the comment I made from your flyer here for your May 10th event. The graces given on December 12th, 1531 were extended to this image, and I presume the other six images traveling the country as well. What does that mean from a practical standpoint?
You can find many relics all over the world. And what is a relic? It's because this image of Our Lady of Guadalupe was touched to the original tilma. That makes that image become a relic, okay? So that happened to this image that I take. This is the only time that they have extended those graces that were given when she first imprinted herself on December 12, 1531 to these 220 copies that St. John Paul II had made. He commissioned them. Seven came to the United States. That means that when you are in front of this image, you are praying, you are receiving exactly the same graces as if you were at the Basilica in Mexico City praying with the original tilma.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that you're also going to have Our Lady's tilma at our event on July 19th. That's our 25th anniversary event. Certainly everybody knows about this because we've been promoting it quite heavily on the radio. It's going to be there, and so all these graces will be available at our event. And I'm so happy that you're going to be there, because it doesn't make sense to not have Our Lady Guadalupe at the Guadalupe's 25th anniversary.
She has
to be. Thank you. Are you finding that you're getting more invitations? Is the word getting out? Are you making more appearances in these kind of, like what you're doing on May 10th?
Oh yes, we are growing. We just sometimes don't even have the time to fulfill all of the invitations we are receiving. We are so excited. I was just looking at numbers of last year, and I think Our Lady was exposed to more than 9,000 people.
Oh, is that right?
Can you imagine? And out of those 9,000, maybe over 20% interacted directly with Our Lady.
Yeah.
That means that they went up and they prayed with her. I mean, So many miracles happen, Dave, and she is always, always touching hearts.
Yeah. And I know you have been to a lot of the Fullness of Truth events, including the one in Allen that was at the December of last year. And it always seems like there's a line. You know,
always.
You've got the booth set up, and so people are drawn to Our Lady. And you say that there are miracles. Well, and it may not be, you know, I don't know what kind of miracles you've experienced, but what generally speaking do people say after they've had an opportunity to venerate the image?
Well, first of all, they all get very emotional because they understand, they feel her presence there and Jesus, right? Because the most important thing about Our Lady of Guadalupe is not only her, is that she's pregnant with our Lord Jesus Christ. So one time we had a man come up and he said, I was supposed to visit Our Lady in Mexico City. I made a promise, and that was 60 years ago, and I still have not been able to fulfill it. So thank you for bringing her, because now I can fulfill my promise. And that was to, his promise was regarding his girlfriend at the time, who was pregnant, thinking about aborting, and he asked the intercession of our Blessed Mother for her not to abort.
Mm.
She did not abort. She became his wife, and he was present at that conference. His wife has passed away, but he was there with his daughter, his granddaughter, and his great granddaughter.
Oh, really? Praise
so
God.
So three generations were healed right there in front of Our Lady.
Mm, mm.
So there's a lot of spiritual healing besides all the healing, all the physical healing that takes place with
Our Lady. And that's even more important, the spiritual healing than even the physical healing.
It's just that sometimes you can't see it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's always happening. And that's what happens whenever people go and they spend some time with in front of the relic image. They just feel this peace, and you can see even their face, their gaze changes.
Yeah. You recently came back from, I believe, your first pilgrimage with Semper Maria down to the Shrine of Our Lady Guadalupe.
Yes.
Tell us about that. And for those of us who have never been to Mexico City, like myself, vicariously.
You have to come down.
I think you're right. I'm actually going to Medjugorje this summer. In June, I'm going to be there. My wife is going and my son is going. And so I'm very excited about that. But definitely on the bucket list at some point. And I actually would like my wife and I to go on one of your trips.
You would love to have
you. But tell us how that went and what were some of the highlights?
It was amazing. And I'll just give you a quote that the priest said. And I loved what he said. He goes, Ingrid, I've been on several pilgrimages, but this one is unique. This is a true pilgrimage because we really go into the spiritual part. It's not just the touristy thing. You know, it is a spiritual part. And we go, we use the Nican Mopua. The Nican Mopua is a manuscript that was written 10 years after the apparitions. And it's kind of like the Gospel of Our Lady of Guadalupe, you could call it that way. Mm-hmm. So it has all the information. It narrates all the apparitions. So we go through all of that. We visit each one of the different chapels in the Basilica. So we spend the whole day at the Basilica going through that. Plus, we go through other churches. We begin with one where the first image, it's a little statue that came with Hernán Cortés and a soldier that came to Mexico. And through that image, they feel that they were able to have the conquest, be victorious. So we start there. So it's a complete, it's like you are submerged in a story.
Yeah.
Once you arrive, and we go through everything until the day you come back. So it's a 4-day, 3-night. And we have several more coming up in the fall. We're just trying to adjust times and dates because we always invite a priest to come with us.
Okay.
So it depends on the availability of the priest. But we also do groups. So if anybody has a group and you already have a priest, contact us. We are happy to. Our webpage is Semper Maria, S-E-M-P-E-R, Maria.com.
SemperMaria.com. Let's turn our attention again to the event that I talked about at the beginning, All Saints Catholic Parish in Dallas. On Saturday, May 10th, 9 a.m. to noon, including Mass, including a rosary, and also presentation by Ingrid Meyer, my guest, beginning at 10 a.m., Our Lady Guadalupe, Meaning and Symbolism in the fellowship hall. That's not part of the title. It's going to be in the fellowship hall. But meaning and symbolism. And you know, I've told you many times that my daughter and I came to one of your presentations many, many years ago. And she was quite young, but I know it made a profound impact on her and also on me to hear all this. And so if you have, you know, 45 minutes, an hour, what are some of the highlights? What do you most like to talk about in regard to Our Lady of Guadalupe?
Well, first of all, is to be that Our Lady of Guadalupe is completely Christ-centered. So sometimes, you know what we were talking about, sometimes they don't understand about why she came so many times and all these different apparitions, or, you know, our brothers and sisters that are not Catholic, that are still Christians, they don't understand why we go to Mary, why she intercedes for us. Here is the answer. She is the Mother of God, and in the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, she brings Jesus with herself in that womb. And that is the most important thing. And she brought this Christ, this God that the Aztecs could not understand, and because they saw their gods far away, you know, and they were vengeful and they could destroy. And here, with so much love, the mother brings a God to them. They don't have to go to the God. The God comes to them, right? And that's when they understand. So all these different meanings and the symbols that are on her image that they understood, and that's why they converted. It's amazing. Just the eyes. I mean, did you know that there's 13 different images that are imprinted in her eyes?
Of people, right?
Yes, yeah. That is the scene. They think that's the scene of right before she imprints herself on the tilma. The people that were right there waiting to see the bishop were imprinted in her eyes.
It's almost like a picture was taken at her eye of what she was looking at the time. Yeah, I know we could talk for hours about the symbolism on the tilma, and it's absolutely fascinating. I know there have been books that have been written about it as well. Let me, in closing out, again, Ingrid Meyer is my guest. She is the founder of Semper Maria. You can go to SemperMaria.com and find out more about where Our Lady's tilma is going to be. The two events that I'm aware of are May 10th at All Saints Catholic Parish in Dallas from 9 to noon, including 9 a.m. Mass, 11:30 Rosary, and a presentation on Our Lady Guadalupe by Ingrid. July 19th, Saturday, Plano Event Center, big 25th anniversary event. Please register, because I know we're past the halfway mark in registrations, probably up to about 1,200 by now, I'm guessing. grnonline.com/anniversary. Yeah, it's a free event. Father Chris Alar, Deacon Hero Brooke Sivers, Matt Marr concert. Jerry and Debbie and Adam and Cecil Anderson is going to be there. I mean, my goodness. Okay, the registrations just went up. but do register, because there will come a time when we're going to say it's closed. I mean, you can't register anymore. So please register. So Ingrid, we're about out of time, but what else do you want to say to our listeners before we wrap this up?
Well, I hope you can truly join us on Saturday, May 10th. The Marian Servants of the Spirit of Christ, they are one of 17 different communities in the country. They're part of the Marian Servants of Divine Providence, and their main house is in Florida. So they have been in the diocese since March 2023, and they're the ones who invited me. This is like their big event that they're having, and they wanted our beautiful Blessed Mother to be present.
And I've never heard of them.
Yes, so this is a great way. They do great things, and they get together every Tuesday at All Saints Catholic Community. So,
all right, very good. Well, all this information is on Ingrid's website, which is SemperMaria.com, S-E-M-P-E-R. It's kind of like Semper Fi, the Marines, you know, always faithful.
Always.
This is Semper, always Mary. Always Mary, SemperMaria.com, SemperMaria.com. And
if they want to know more about the Marian Servants, the website is MarianServantsDallas.org.
All right. MarianneServantsDallas.org. Ingrid, thank you so much for coming in and being a great guest as always. Thanks to Cecil Anderson. And also thanks to my first guests, Dr. Andrew Gill, Dr. John Soriano, and also Jimmy Bell, talking about this Irving Convention controversy, which at least for the time being, they have stopped the plans to bring the world's largest casino to Irving, Texas. How crazy would that have been? All right. This has been the Good News Show. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Holy Week and a very joyful Easter. And we'll see you next Monday on Easter Monday for the next show. God bless you.
Thanks for joining us for the Good News Show here on KATH 910 AM on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Please join us next week at the same time for the next Good News Show.
GRN family, this is Toya Hall, COO of the GRN, and I have an exciting invitation for you. Join us on Saturday, July the 19th at the Plano Event Center in the Dallas, Texas area for our 25th Jubilee Anniversary Celebration. The event is free, but you need to register to attend, so go to grnonline.com right away.
KATH 910 AM, Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth.